I don't normally tell you like my title, but I think it's important to start it off. Gethsemane Prayers. Oof. Is that, I just need to say that, Gethsemane Prayers, everybody's got it like, oh yeah, we're going to go to deep prayer. So we're going to go backwards today to go forwards, because that makes sense. Sometimes it does. To take a closer look at Jesus and the disciples in the Garden of Gethsemane, the night before Jesus was tried and crucified. The resurrection of Jesus is not the end of the story, in case you didn't know that, but it's actually the beginning of a new way to live. Because now the prophecies have come true, and the new covenant is in place. And so we have to relearn how to live every time that we're resurrected. Isn't that fun? It's like mixed reviews. To really understand how we live going forward, we need to go back before the cross to the quiet, agonizing moment in the garden with Jesus and Peter and John and James. We need to better understand Jesus so we may emulate, put into practice what Jesus models for us in this moment of prayer. Because Jesus is who we follow, right? So we're going to read two versions of this moment because Matthew and Luke, as oftentimes they do, they come at this with a little bit different approach, and I think it's important to understand both of them. So we're going to first read Matthew 26, 36 through 46. Actually, Matthew, yeah. Then Jesus went with them to the olive grove called Gethsemane, and he said, "Sit here while I go over there to pray." He took Peter and Zebedee's two sons, James and John, and he became in anguished and distress. He told them, "My soul is crushed with grief to the point of death. Stay here and keep watch with me." He went on a little farther and bowed with his face to the ground, praying, "My Father, if it is possible, let this cup of suffering be taken from me. Yet I want your will to be done, not mine." Then he returned to the disciples and found them asleep. He said to Peter, "Couldn't you watch with me even 1 hour? Keep watch and pray so that you will not give in to temptation. For the spirit is willing, but the body is weak." Then Jesus left them a second time and prayed, "My Father, if this cup cannot be taken away unless I drink it, your will be done." When he returned to them again, he found them sleeping, for they couldn't keep their eyes open. So he went to pray a third time, saying the same things again. Then he came to the disciples and said, "Go ahead and sleep. Have your rest. But look, the time has come. The Son of Man is betrayed into the hand of sinners. Up, let's be going. Look, my betrayer is here." So when we go to Luke's version, it's a little bit different. The disciples are still sleeping, of course. So then, accompanied by the disciples, Jesus left the upstairs room and went, as usual, to the Mount of Olives. There he told them, "Pray that you will not give in to temptation." He walked away about a stone's throw and knelt down and prayed, "Father, if you are willing, please take this cup of suffering away from me. Yet I want your will to be done, not mine." Then an angel from heaven appeared and strengthened him. He prayed more fervently, and he was in such agony of spirit that his sweat fell to the ground like great drops of blood. At last he stood up again and returned to the disciples, only to find them asleep, exhausted from grief. "Why are you sleeping?" he asked them. "Get up and pray so that you will not give in to temptation." Jesus goes to Gethsemane, also known as the Mount of Olives. Luke tells us this was a usual thing that Jesus did, that he would go to Gethsemane and he would pray. Before we get deeper into the scriptures, we're going to explore Gethsemane a little bit and its significance in the culture at the time. The word Gethsemane comes from the Hebrew word Gat Shemanim, meaning oil press. The garden was a working garden filled with olive trees and an olive oil and an oil press, an olive oil press. It's not a botanical garden. It's not a tulip garden where you'd go and like lay out your picnic blanket. It's a working garden. It's busy, not quiet. The process of harvesting the olives and crushing the olives for oil is rough. The place Jesus entered time and time again represented crushing, pressing, beating. Some symbolism here is going to be paralleled with concepts Deacon Pam talked about a couple weeks ago about the threshing floor. Or Deacon Charlotte. Deacon Charlotte. Doesn't really matter. It's the same concepts. Harvesting is rough. To harvest and transform crops for use is not easy. It's hard on the crop. So this is a working place of production, pressure, and process. Olive oil was extremely important and useful in this time and very valuable. Folks would know the garden and understand what happened here. At this time, the olive oil production was multi-stage and an intense process. It was not a quick and it was not gentle. To process the olives, you're going to learn about this. You didn't even know that you're going to get a little education on olive oil. Everybody's going to get olive oil after this. Olives were harvested first by beating the branches so that the fruit would fall from the trees. The olives were then placed in a stone basin. They had these sticks, and they would literally beat the branches and the tree to get the fruit to drop to the ground. So to harvest the crops, it started with beating the crops. Then, something kind of like this, for a look at, to help our minds, there'd be a stone basin with a massive circular stone weighing hundreds of pounds were rolled over them to crush them. Skin broken, flesh torn, pits crushed. After crushing came pressing. The pulp was placed in woven mats and stacked under pressure, weights applied gradually. This happened multiple times, producing different kinds of oil. So as you look kind of here, you could see on the your left, where there's kind of like a wood piece over, and that's mat stacked to each other, and then they would add weights to the end of that to push down. And then on your right side, you could kind of see the mats. I'm sorry for my YouTube and Facebook people. Google Images is fantastic to look this up. So first, the first press produced the finest oil, the purest oil. We know today to be extra virgin olive oil. It flowed freely, required the least pressure, and was the most valuable. The oil was used to light lamps in homes and the temple for sacred purposes and offerings to God. Kind of cool, a primary purpose was for light. The second press needed more pressure by adding weight. The oil did not flow, but rather needed to be forced out. Quality was slightly lower and used for cooking and daily life needs. This oil could be looked at as being used to sustain life. The final press needed extreme pressure with the full weight of the press applied. Intense crushing forced until the last drops of oil came out. This was the lowest quality, used in soap, medicinal ointments, and healing wounds. This oil was for healing, so olive oil brings light, it sustains life, and heals. After, olives are crushed, sacrificed, and put under extreme pressure. Now back to Jesus. Remember Jesus? This is about Jesus. Now back to Jesus and the scriptures. So Jesus knew what Gethsemane represented. And he knew it was time for him to fulfill scriptures. he becomes the olive. He would soon be beaten, emotionally, spiritually, and physically soon. He would be crushed under the weight of taking on sin, separation, and God's judgment. He would conquer it, but he had to take it on first. He was pressed on all sides. Little shout out to Isaiah 53. And we see this in his prayer as he is being open and honest with God. Open and honest with God. He held nothing back in this prayer, this Gethsemane prayer. Quote, he prayed more fervently. It was in such agony of spirit that he sweat, that his sweat fell from to the ground like great drops of blood. In parallel to the olives, Jesus brings us, gifts us with a few different purposes from his crushing. We no longer live in darkness because Jesus is the light of the world. And in John 8:12, Jesus says, I am the light of the world. His surrender to God's will made a way for our salvation, bringing sustainment of life beyond the grave. In John 6:35, he says, I am the bread of life. And in John 19:25, he says, I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live even though they die. So light and life sustainment. And by Jesus' wounds, we are healed. Back to that reference of Isaiah 53. And in John 10:11, he says, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. Jesus not only treats our wounds, carries us when we are weak, but takes on our iniquities upon himself. The ultimate physician and healer. Shepherd would do anything to protect its sheep. So what can we take from this moment in the garden? Because this is about us, our growth, our movement forward. Jesus prayed an honest prayer, being real with God. How real are you with God? He did not pretend the cross was easy. He knew it was hard. Hard spiritually, hard emotionally, hard physically. Jesus shows a deep, true faith by being honest and understanding the situation, but submitting to God's will anyway. Complete surrender to God's authority. Luke 42. Father, if you are willing, please take this cup of suffering away from me. Yet I want your will to be done, not mine. Jesus brought it all to God, everything. Church, one of the things we can take away is we need to pray with depth. We need to pray with honesty and openness to follow God's will, even if it's difficult. Bring your all to God. If you don't like what's going on or what you're being asked to do, talk about it with God. Don't shove it down and pass it off as something it's not. A lot of things that we are asked to do in our faith walk, it is difficult. And if you're honest with God in your prayers, you're going to be honest with yourself. And you're actually going to be able to move forward through it better than if you kind of sit in denial and like not really understanding what it is that you're being asked to do at your faith journey in a certain period of time. Second, God's faithfulness to us is not always shown by removing something. The struggle from us, but sustaining us through it. God is still answering your prayers, even if it's not what you think that it should look like. God doesn't always remove something from us, doesn't always remove the struggle, but I promise you, God will sustain you through it. An angel came to give Jesus strength, not to save Jesus from the cross, but to strengthen him through the cross. God gives us strength to go through it when it is not removed. With God, you are always stronger than what you think you are. Why do you think Jesus kept telling the disciples to pray so that you don't give in to temptation? So when you're in prayer, when you're with Jesus, you can allow Jesus to speak to you, to strengthen you, to support you. Third, Jesus was fully present and awake. Quote, watch and pray so that you will not fall into temptation. We're going to use that again. Jesus knows Judas ran off to betray him. He knows his arrest is imminent, beginning a very intense 24 hours. Can you imagine sitting in that waiting room? Knowing what was coming, knowing you were innocent, knowing this is what you were brought here to do. And now it's here. Jesus shows us how to wait. Our favorite thing, right? Jesus shows us how to wait. It's by being alert and praying fervently. Why? So we feel and address the emotions with God. So we are diligent to see and feel how God strengthens us. So we align with God and follow God's will in the situation. If it aligns with our will or not. Don't fall into spiritual complacency. Be devoted, be committed, be present. That's why he wanted the disciples to be awake. And he probably knew they were going to fall asleep. Remember Peter? He already told him, you're going to deny me three times. He probably already knew, like, man, if that dude could get into prayer and pray fervently, he will stand strong when they're like, hey, do you know that guy? But he knew he's going to fall asleep, and he's going to fall into temptation, and he's going to deny me. We can learn from Peter. We can learn from the times where we filled in the blank. Pray fervently. Church, living after Easter, that's what we're talking about. Living after Easter, living after resurrection is praying Gethsemane prayers. Being aware and honest when it's hard, surrender. Be obedient to God's will when it's unclear, lean into trusting God more. When it hurts, be persistent and still obey God. Matthew 26:39. He went on a little farther, bowed his face to the ground, praying, my Father, if it is possible, let this cup of suffering be taken away from me. Yet I want your will to be done, not mine. Amen.